Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining the Mphasis Q1 FY 2022 earnings conference call. I am Lizanne, your moderator for the day. We have with us today Mr. Nitin Rakesh, CEO of Mphasis, and Mr. Manish Dugar, CFO. As a reminder, there is a webcast link in the call invite mail that the Mphasis management team would be referring to today. The same presentation is also available on the Mphasis website, that is www.mphasis.com, in the investor section under financial and filing as well on both the BSE and NSE websites. Request you to please have the presentation handy. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Shiv Muttoo from CDR. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah. Thank you, Lizanne. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us on Mphasis Q1 FY 2022 results conference call. We have with us today Mr. Nitin Rakesh, CEO, Mr. Manish Dugar, CFO, and Mr. Viju George, Head Investor Relations. Before we begin, I would like to state that some of the statements in today's discussion may be forward-looking in nature and may involve certain risks and uncertainties. A detailed statement in this regard is available on the Q1 FY 2022 results release that has been sent out to all of you earlier. I now invite Nitin to begin the proceedings of this call. Over to you, Nitin.
Thank you, Shiv. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining the call this morning. I hope all are staying healthy and well. As we step into this new financial year, I look back at the past year and all the events that unfolded throughout the year. It is remarkable how much we have accomplished, not only in terms of financial performance, but also in our commitment to help clients, communities, and our employees. I wish to first thank all Mphasis employees globally for their dedication and relentless efforts in the face of difficult personal challenges during an unprecedented situation. In the midst of this crisis, there were also powerful opportunities. I am glad that we made the investments at the time we did and proud of how we were able to achieve client demands. Our bring tea back into IT strategy enables us to profitably play in higher value and significant digital-led constructs. As we look back at some of the core mega trends that were in play before the crisis, it was clear that the end customer-led disruption was becoming the norm. With expectations shifting dramatically towards a digital native experience, powered and shaped by use of creative technologies that were being deployed in front of the customers. This also led to a pressure on most traditional enterprises to become more agile and responsive, especially in response times, while staying resilient in face of shifting volume and demand patterns. The demand from businesses to their CIO and IT providers was to provide this combination of great customer experience, high agility, while lowering the operating costs, including the cost of associated legacy technology. The recent crisis is a major accelerant in this regard and has accentuated the need for enterprises to fast-track their transformation programs, leading to a snapback in demand along few major themes such as public and hybrid cloud adoption, data-driven transformation to drive better personalized experiences, as well as to unlock the power of data-driven revenue streams. There is also a renewed focus on core modernization, combined with the themes of cloud and data, as well as investing in building new platforms that can drive a new business architecture aligned towards agility and customer centricity. The investments in consumer-facing tech have also seen an acceleration with the digital-first mindset. All these trends are well captured by our tribes, as we have discussed in the past few quarters, and as I will further elaborate shortly. Playing profitably in these themes is instrumental to our market share gains and growth. Our four-pillar strategy for FY 2022 and beyond, as outlined in the last call, is underpinned on building a scalable, sustainable growth firm. To recap, our theme of continuity and acceleration to play profitably in the four tech megatrends identified on the prior slide rests on fortifying four pillars. First is continuously augmenting our capability, both from a go-to-market as well as a delivery perspective. This consists of tribes and squads expansion, our true differentiator, which we mentioned before. Specialist resource buildup in our cloud unit, which is structured as a guild foundational to all our tribes. Domain expertise that cuts across all the units that we operate in across all geographies. Second, geographic expansion of sales and delivery. We recently announced our expansion into Canada to build on our existing operations there. We're setting up a new emphasis Canadian headquarters in Calgary, Alberta, in partnership with Government of Alberta and University of Calgary. This is a great showcase of public-private partnership for tech transformation in the region. Through this multifaceted partnership, we plan to co-invest with the university to establish a Quantum City Center of Excellence that will be dedicated to promoting the commercial application of quantum technologies. Recognized as one of the fastest-growing service companies in quantum computing, Emphasis will act as anchor company committed to growing applications of quantum science to users in global market while enabling fundamental research in quantum science and engineering throughout the university. We are also expanding our expansion to the continent on the continent in Europe with plans for the Nordics and DACH, especially Germany, along with our anchor clients in each of those regions. Third, deepening and broadening of the leadership pool. We promoted tenured leaders while also bringing in new management talent. And finally, expanding our portfolio of IP-driven AI-ML innovations. We continue to be a market leader in offering our AI-ML and quantum computing solutions through some of the leading technology marketplaces. Next Labs continues to be at the forefront of building these innovations. A key component of our continuity and acceleration strategy is the new client acquisition, or the NCA program. We've reinvigorated this program over the recent quarters with dedicated leadership. We've carved out 5 well-considered select verticals to focus on for NCAs, namely BFS and insurance, in both of which our positioning and track record is already strong. These two verticals are large enough to continue to provide growth runway in the long term. Logistics, high-tech, and healthcare form the other 3 verticals on the NCA charter. Each of these 5 verticals has its respective client acquisition strategies led by dedicated sales, delivery, and domain NCA leadership. We have an elaborate operating model in place to transition NCA clients to strategic client status with a client engagement structure and investments defined through the phases of the transition. We are pleased with the outcomes of our NCA strategy. Our strong growth in high-tech is encouraging. We see this becoming the next $100 million vertical on a quarterly annualized basis. We are already there. We also see our tech-based propositions and solutions frameworks having valuable use cases in multiple verticals, augmenting our NCA strategy. Another heartening outcome is that today we count all top 10 U.S. banks ranked by asset size among our clients, when 3 years ago we had 5 in this category. Except for Q1 of FY21, the pandemic quarter, we have had consistent sequential growth every quarter led by the direct business growth. Our direct business growth is accelerating on a larger revenue base. In Q1 FY22, our overall gross revenue at US$362.9 million registered a growth of 6% quarter over quarter and 18.8% year over year in US dollar terms, and 5.9% quarter over quarter and 16.3% year over year in constant currency. Direct business continues to power our growth, growing at 10% quarter over quarter and 34.7% year over year in US dollar terms, and 9.8% quarter over quarter and 32.5% year over year in constant currency. The trajectory of our direct annual growth is consistently rising, with the growth topping 32% in this quarter from 7% 4 quarters back in first quarter FY21. Our year over year growth in direct is the highest on record. The contribution of direct at 89% continues to rise. As we continue to prioritize our growth and investments in direct, the strong showing has also helped us to manage the decline in DXC, the contribution of which is now at 9% of revenue. DXC revenue declined 18.1% quarter over quarter and 48.7% year over year in constant currency. This is in line with our commentary of DXC dropping to mid to high single digit as a percentage of revenue by end of FY22. We continue to add clients in the significant revenue buckets. In this quarter, we added 2 clients in the US $100 million plus category and US $50 million plus category each to take the count of 100 million and 50 million clients to 4 and 7 respectively. Geography-wise, all our markets fared well. Our core market, the U.S., grew 27.8%. Direct in Europe has grown 35.5% year-over-year in U.S. dollar terms. Our pipeline in Europe is strong, especially with new clients, and we expect this region to continue to be a growth driver for FY22 and beyond. Specifically, I would like to call out our sustained industry-leading growth performance in direct. Market share gains with our top 10 clients and beyond have helped drive growth here. Contribution from our key clients has been consistently rising, reflecting increasing depth of key relationships and share gains. While our top 10 clients have collectively grown double digits year-over-year on a consistent basis, what is equally heartening is the growth picking up beyond the top 10 clients, a theme that we will return to in a bit. We believe that our broad-based success with clients positions us well for industry-leading growth in direct for FY22, on top of our industry-leading direct growth in FY21, in line with our FY22 guidance articulated last quarter. Our growth this quarter in direct was broad-based across most verticals. Our largest vertical, banking and capital markets, has grown 23.7% year-over-year in constant currency for the quarter, representing the fourth straight quarter of 20%+ growth. Our direct BCM grew 11% quarter-over-quarter and 29.3% year-over-year in U.S. dollar terms. On a year-over-year basis, we believe this is best-in-class growth in that industry segment and was broad-based across sub-segments of BCM. We continue to enjoy share gains with our key clients in BCM. This quarter also saw robust sequential growth in ITCE and logistics and transportation verticals within direct, with ITCE growing at 16.4% sequentially and 168% year-over-year off a low base, and logistics transportation growing at 14.4% sequentially and 27.7% year-over-year in constant currency. Our client stats reflect the strengthening position with several top clients post-vendor consolidation. We continue to believe that our wallet share gains emanate from our competency-driven positioning. As our top clients prioritize and execute their spending plans, our preferred partner status places us well to capture additional market share. Notably, we are also seeing stronger growth from the lower half of our top 10 clients, as well as growth beyond our top 10 clients. Our top 5 and top 10 clients have grown consistently, registering 17 and 24% growth respectively in 1Q on a trading 12-month basis. The average contribution of our top 5 clients exceeds $110 million on a trailing 12-month basis as well. Our top 4 clients are now $100 million plus on a trailing 12-month basis, and all our top 5 clients are $75 million plus, which we believe is unique for a company of our size. Top clients number 6 to 10 have grown at 56% on a trailing 12-month basis. This is much higher than average growth of 6 to 10, indicates strong growth diversification among our key clients. Our clients in the 11 to 20 bucket have grown at 19% on a trailing 12-month basis as well, with 24% growth for the overall direct business on a TTM basis. Notably, all of our 7 US dollar 50 million plus clients grew sequentially. In a nutshell, our strong client performance across the board supports our industry-leading growth in direct. We recorded a TCV of $505 million in first quarter, an all-time high for emphasis. This quarter's TCV includes a $250 million deal that we signed in this quarter and announced in our last earnings call. This marks the sixth straight quarter of $200 million plus net new TCV that is not included in renewal deals. Our TCV on a trailing 12-month basis is up 62% year-over-year. We believe that our firmly rising TCV trend is a testament to our improving track record in the scale and consistency of large deals. Specifically, I would like to make 2 points about our TCV composition that continues to shape our deals on an ongoing basis. There's an increasing component of large and longer tenure deals. These deals are transformation-led, integrated, and leverage our multiple deal archetypes and tribes in combination. Secondly, there is a heavy news and services portion in our net new TCV, thanks to the tribes, with a contribution of 85% of first quarter deals in news and areas. As we report our TCV on a net new basis, excluding renewals, we find the correlation between our TCV and revenue growth to be fairly high, exceeding 0.9 in this quarter. Coming to our client metrics, our track record of migrating clients from one revenue bucket to the next continues to be healthy. Specifically, our conversion ratio of clients in one revenue tier to the next is solid and improving. Specifically, half of our $10 million plus clients are $20 plus million clients, and over three quarters of our clients in the $20 plus million category are 50 million plus, and 60% of our 50 million plus clients are 100 million plus clients. These stats have continued to improve. We win two large deals on average every quarter, marked by increasing deal sizes. As the slide indicates, the average deal size on an LTM basis is $96 million, three times of what it was 2 years ago. As I mentioned, our large deals are increasingly multi-tower, transformation-based, and longer tenure. The growing size reflects this capability evolution. Our margin philosophy affords us the flexibility to manage our profitability in an environment of rising cost of talent in a heated market. In this quarter, we were able to absorb higher cost of revenue and unexpected COVID-related expenses by modulating our discretionary spend on the SG&A side, and thus operated in the stated margin range. We've hired 1,981 employees in the first quarter, FY22, which represents a 7% addition to our workforce. Our utilization rate reflects our capacity build-up, including trainees, and we expect to deploy our bench in the second quarter while continuing to aggressively hire to service new demand. Our EBIT margin for the quarter at 15.9% are in line with our stated operating margin band of 15.5% to 17%. Our EPS for the quarter at 18.16 grew 23.1% year over year. We had a one-time COVID impact of about 30 basis points. Our EPS growth exceeds our operating profit growth, which in turn exceeds our revenue growth, which we believe indicates operating leverage in our model. Our cash generation stood at $48 million in Q1, represents the fifth consecutive quarter of 40 million plus cash generation and the highest absolute level in the past 19 quarters. Our operating cash flow as a percentage of EBITDA continues to rise and exceeds our profit. Our closing cash balance of $462 million is the highest since the first quarter of FY17. Several ingredients go into formulation of our success mantra that powers our robust performance in direct, namely our personalized customer engagement model with key clients, with sales client partner, delivery leaders for the account, and dedicated account CTOs. Customer at the center of our GTM and resource allocation, which allows for a high degree of account-specific innovation. Second, our ability to build ever-growing pipeline on the back of our effective tribes and squads model, which gives us future visibility. 85% of our TCV wins are tribe-led. Supporting our tribes model with the smart surround and reinforce strategy that characterizes emphasis innovation DNA, including client-dedicated CTOs and consulting-oriented technology advisory group, programmatic innovation with our Sparkle program, focused research and IP innovation through our Next Labs group. Our capacity to stitch large integrated deals using our proven transformation models such as front-to-back and zero-cost transformation, which we have discussed in the past with you, the $250 million engagement that we've announced is a good example of this. And finally, the scaling up of the digital competencies of our talent with our well-established key learning source platform, Talent Next. This has seen rapid adoption since its inception 3 years ago. It provides emphasis on the skill muscle to enable execution on next-gen positioning with an approach to a T-shaped talent, blending domain and technology competencies for next-gen skills. All of the above threaded together constitute our business operating model designed for differentiation, repeatability, and scalability. This model enables us to win more proactively with higher win rates. Over 80% of TCV deal wins are proactively shaped. We are pleased to note that given the strong demand for our services and strengthening position across our client base, we also see pricing leverage in our business. To that end, we have actioned a value-based pricing program and are seeing early success in some parts of the portfolio. We expect this to be able to help mitigate some supply-side challenges and provide currency for further investments with our clients. To sum up, I leave you with 3 points. One, we are off to a good start in FY22. Direct growth, 32.5% year-over-year in constant currency, will continue to be supported by robust TCV that we've added across verticals. Direct performance has also helped us mitigate declines in DXC, the contribution of which is now reduced to 9% of revenue in the first quarter. Two, all our KPIs are moving in the right direction. Namely, our track record of winning large deals is consistently improving with 100 million, 200 million, and 250 million deals in less than a year. The nature of our deals is increasingly transformation-led and long-tenure-based. Our TCV at an all-time high of $500 million is up 62% on a trailing 12-month basis. Our growth is getting broad-based with Europe, high-tech, logistics and transportation aiding growth in addition to the anchor verticals of BCM and anchor geography of the U.S. We continue to drive market share gains with our key clients. And finally, our client mining metrics across revenue buckets continues to strengthen. As referenced, our average top 5 client contribution crossed $110 million, and our top 6 to 10 clients are now growing well above our direct revenue growth with 57% LTM growth. We've added to our count of $50 million and $100 million clients, with 4 clients in the $100 million-plus and 7 in the $50 million-plus bucket. We believe this is unique for a company of our size. 3, investing for growth by using operating leverage and operating a steady target operating margin band. We believe our margin stance ensures stability in an environment of supply headwinds. Thus, the revenue growth translates into sustainable EPS and PAT growth and consistently rising free cash flow generation, complemented by improving DSO. Our strong start to the year reinforces our confidence in reiterating our guidance for the industry-leading growth in direct on top of industry-leading performance in FY21. We retain our stated operating margin band of 15.5% to 17%. Our margin stance enables us to make the needed investments to sustain our industry-leading direct growth while also absorbing rising costs associated with supply side. We expect continued growth from our key clients as vendor consolidation gains continue to accrue in a healthy spend environment. It's the increasingly diversified nature of our client base and their metrics that are the foundation of our growth. On that note, I request the operator to open the line for questions, please.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone wishing to ask a question may please press star and one on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Mukul Garg from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. First of all, Nitin, congratulations. Excellent quarter in terms of growth. The first question obviously is on this, the kind of growth you are delivering, currently. I think this probably will be one of the strongest growth ever in your history. If you can just give us some sense of how sustainable is this? Was there any one-off which was there? And, combined with the deal win number, what's the perception of the market right now versus maybe a quarter back? Are you seeing an acceleration in the overall deal environment, or it remains, it was robust and it remains so?
Great question, Mukul. I think there are three or four questions in your question, so let me address them one by one. Firstly, I think as I mentioned in my opening remarks, the spend environment is actually fairly tailwinded. I think a number of the trends that got accelerated thanks to this, despite the unfortunate human cost of the crisis, are basically forcing enterprises to accelerate a lot of their longer-term spend plans into a crunch time frame. I think the basic pivot, structural pivot in enterprise tech consumption really is very simply the massive migration from spending money in a CapEx-driven on-prem data center-centric model to consuming almost all tech on as a service, because that gives them the agility and the customer centricity that is needed to compete in the market today. This is not an overnight shift. This is not a 1-2 quarter phenomena. This was something that started in the 2012-13-14 timeframe, slowly was picking up speed, and got massively accelerated by the crisis. We still believe this is a 3 to 5 year journey for most enterprises at the very least, because of the complexity required in actually making that pivot and changing that model. It is a technological change. It is a skill set issue. It is a culture issue. So I think this is in many of our conversations, clients are calling it a tech investing super cycle that will last at least a few years. Now, of course, our growth has been very broad-based. I mentioned that across client segments, across industries. It is not led by one client expansion. It is not led by one deal conversion. It is actually fairly broad-based because the fact all of our $50 million plus clients have grown sequentially and all of our verticals have seen solid growth on a year-over-year basis is really a culmination of all the work that we've done and the fact that we've actually had a pretty strong TCV wins for five quarters in a row now. So I think it's to me we are in the midst of a pretty strong tech investment cycle, and the challenge for us will be to keep up with those demands, to keep up with sets, and to also continue to look around the corners, because a lot of the tech is actually evolving very, very rapidly. Not only the consumption is evolving rapidly, the change is also evolving very rapidly. So ability to just look ahead and making those investments, what looked like a 3-4 year runway is probably a 2-quarter runway to invest, and hence we have to be very, very nimble in those investment decisions as well. So hopefully that gives you some color.
No, sure. Thanks. And I know that DXC is becoming a smaller part of your business. So, this is kind of a repeated question. Any update on the resolution with DXC, given the stage where you are in the MRC?
I said that last time also, Mukul. I think we've given you some guidance on where we think, we will stabilize. At this point, it's a little bit premature to talk about the next steps publicly. As we have more updates, we will provide them as we go forward.
Fair enough. I'll get back into the queue. Thanks for taking my question, and best of luck for the rest of the year.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Manik Taneja from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity and congratulations for a very solid performance this quarter. Just wanted to get some sense on a couple of things. We've seen our onshore proportion of revenues increase in the current quarter. This is contrary to the trend that we've seen across peers. So is this led by some of the new deals ramp up, and do we expect this to reverse? That's question number one. The second question was with regards to your comments on pricing. You suggested that you were seeing some pricing leverage in the market. Just wanted to get more insights on the overall pricing environment, and do you think that helps negate some of the supply side pressures? Thanks.
Sure. I understood your second question. I'm a little bit unclear as to what the question was on the first part, but let me address the pricing issue, and then maybe you can summarize your first question for me again. I think what I mentioned on the pricing side was that as you go up the value chain, as we engage early, our ability to drive value-based pricing and move away from pure, simple, cost plus models, as well as actually work closely with customers in ensuring that they're able to see the value we bring and the environment we are operating in, and hence give us the ability to do right pricing. So I think that is a program that we are very collaboratively working on with our with our engagement team as well as with our clients, and we definitely expect that to release some of the supply constraints driven margin pressures. Of course, the intention for us is to make sure that we are able to balance growth needs, investment needs, and operate in the band that we've stated. So we definitely think that is a lever we can use to continue to invest in the business. I think on your first question, you asked us whether the growth acceleration was due to one large deal or something broader. Am I right?
So Nitin, basically the question was with regards to the on-site increase in on-site component of revenues in the current quarter. Just wanted to understand, is this led by some of the large deal ramp up?
No, I understood. I think headcount addition is a leading indicator for revenue. Definitely, some of the larger deals require us to ramp up on-site first, and then we obviously find ways to continue to stabilize as we sometimes transition and sometimes stabilize the program. If you look at fourth quarter, we had a pretty strong headcount addition on-site. And that's obviously converted to revenue this quarter, because that's the way the cycle works. If you look at the current quarter, we've actually had stronger headcount addition offshore. So some of that will actually normalize as we go forward. So I think the long trend doesn't look like it's going to change dramatically. We will probably have a bias towards growth offshore. But at the same time, we'll obviously continue to proportionately add people in whichever geography we talk about. Based on where we need the talent or where we need to deliver the work. Also keep in mind, we've also added newer geographies outside India. So some of that also may be playing up in the revenue numbers, and we can give you some more color on that as well as we go forward.
Sure. Thank you, and all the best for the future.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nitin Padmanabhan from Investec. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good morning everyone, and congratulations on a great quarter. My question is around margins. So this quarter we have seen gross margins fall off quite a bit, and we have dialed back on S&M and G&A. Just wanted your sense on how much of these gross margins is recoverable going forward. And we don't report attrition, but it's very clear that from an industry perspective, it's going up quite a bit. So in that context, in terms of gross margin recoverability and your ability to continue to sort of, you know, invest in S&M, just wanted your thoughts on that.
So, Sunithin, I'll give you a quick response and maybe Manish can add some more color to it. Broadly speaking, the impact on gross margin is explainable by two or three factors. Firstly, if you look at just the COVID impact, you know, we called out about 30 bips or so as a one-time impact. Then we had utilization that dropped because we ramped up. There is obviously a lag time between hiring, deployment, and billability ability to convert the employees in, you know, from a revenue standpoint. That obviously has an impact on the margin as well. There is some element of, you know, this onshore versus offshore based on just the phase of the ramp up. And also, of course, there is some element of the ability to attract talent, and I think you referenced attrition and cost of labor. So clearly we're going through those as well. I think the key thing to note is that we talked about over the last three or four quarters the fact that we will prioritize growth with an, you know, with a margin band that we want to operate in. There are certain discretionary spends, you know, that are non-manpower related, even that sit in our SG&A expense line. And I think we were able to manage those to make sure that we stay in the EBIT operating band ratio. Combine the, you know, the factors that I talked about from the standpoint of some pricing leverage, some normalization in the onsite offshore, you know, mix given the onboarding trends of the first quarter, and of course, you know, our ability to continue to operate the supply chain, you know, so we keep our margin, you know, steady is other things that we'll focus on as we go forward. I don't know, Manish, if you want to add anything to that.
I think, Nathan, you covered all the points. I would just like to give one color to it, which is the short term and the long term. There are, to your point, Nathan Padmanabhan, I mean, there are a few, you know, costs which has come in at one time, whether it is the COVID expense or the investment for growth reflected in lower utilization. Those are recoverable in the short run. When we look at, you know, some of the longer term investments, those investments will, you know, probably have, you know, matching from our pricing, you know, conversation. So I guess to your point, you know, gross margins are certainly recoverable, some in short term, some in long term. And while that happens, you know, the profitability can be maintained in that range that we have talked about very, very clearly. And, you know, the primary levers are the discretionary spends, which we can kind of, you know, control. And that's what we have demonstrated in this quarter as well.
Sure, that's helpful. Just one more from my side. The unbilled revenue has gone up quite a bit this quarter. Just some color, if you could give there, what's driving that and when do you expect normalization?
Yeah, sure. As you know that, you know, once the month gets over, you know, the invoicing happens after the month, and when you are in an accelerating mode, you know, your subsequent month revenues are typically much higher than the previous month. And if you look at the last month revenue of previous quarter versus last month revenue of this quarter, that's a delta significantly larger than the incremental unbilled. Just to give you some quantification, the actual increase in unbilled is about $13 million, while, you know, the quarter end, you know, month-end revenues are actually higher by about $17 million. From an aging perspective, 95% of this is, you know, within, you know, the payment contracted terms. So, you know, I would say that this unbilled is just a reflection of the scale of growth and, you know, as you know, this, you know, as the period goes, we will bill them and it will move to the build category. Overall, on a DSO basis, if you look at it, unbilled happens to be 35 days out of the 61 days of DSO, which is, you know, pretty much in line with what we have seen in the past as well.
So that's very helpful. Thank you so much and all the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move on to the next question. That is on the line of Sandeep Shah from Equirus Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity and congrats on a very great set of execution, both on revenue and margin. Nitin, it's good to hear about the pricing comment as a whole. So just wanted to understand, is it becoming a pricing uptick from most of your strategic accounts or... Wanted to understand that because at one end in the industry there is a traditional portfolio where pricing pressure continues, at the other end there is a new generation portfolio where pricing increase can be possible. So how these buckets looks like for the emphasis and what confidence drives us that even despite some legacy portfolio, we are confident to bring the pricing up going forward. So some color will help as a whole.
You know, I think you actually answered your own question. Pricing leverage is a function of what part of the value chain you're operating in. I think I called out some four or five key trends at the beginning of my presentation. Those are areas where it is possible for us to look at value-based pricing. It is also possible for us to construct some transformation themes like zero cost, where we can actually bundle the run business in a managed outcome construct, apply extreme automation, and then find the savings to deploy back into the change and the transformation programs. Those are running to be fairly popular, you know, with at least a number of our engagements where we are able to help the client find the money to apply into transformation and hence increase the size and scope of what we do. I think on a pure, you know, run the business or legacy portfolio basis, you know, you're right, there is pressure on those costs because that's a leaking bucket and will continue to actually be as a leaking portion of tech spend as the spend migrates to this new mode of consuming everything on demand. So I think a blend, on an overall basis, we do believe that we have the ability to continue to improve our pricing leverage. Of course, as I mentioned, you know, we're working very closely with our engagement teams and our clients and making sure that we're able to right price all our engagements.
Okay, thanks. And just on deal pipeline, with great closure of larger deal size. Can you throw some light whether such larger deal size or mega deals are still in the pipeline or pipeline now has a more mix of small to medium size? And second, on BPO, this time also the revenue growth has been robust. So is it driven through digital or is it outside digital risk which has driven the growth in BPO?
Yeah, and I think first question on we've said in the last three or four quarters that our pipeline continues to be robust, which means as we've converted almost 1.6 billion into deals won, we've continued to actually add new deals to the pipeline. And, you know, as always, the large deals will be lumpy, but, you know, some will be, you know, 50 million, some could be 250 million. But the pipeline actually continues to be fairly robust and fairly healthy and fairly broad-based, you know, across the sizes of deals as well. Of course, we'll give you more color as we get through the next, you know, two or three quarters. On the BPS revenue growth, I think some of it is, as I mentioned over the last, I think in FY21, third quarter, we talked about the fact that many of our deals are actually bundled, where we are able to find, with, you know, operating levers to apply automation on the business process, apply the whole customer journey map, advisor workstation, and digital intervention. So in a number of ways, it is led by digital transformation. I think the DR portion has been fairly stable given that, you know, most of the volumes that we saw increase happened in FY21. So I think that portion will continue to stay stable. But broadly, the BPS growth is really driven more by transformation projects that are bundled along with many of our large deal constructs.
Okay. Thanks. And just last bookkeeping question. Manish, wanted to understand in terms of the Forex hedge gain in the revenue line, will it be a tailwind to the margin in FY22 as a whole versus FY21?
So, at this point in time, we ended the quarter at 74.3 rupees average, and at least for the given our hedge policy of covering 100% for the next four quarters and progressively reduce percentage over the next four quarters. The forward premium that we have is higher than, you know, what we currently are experiencing. We do believe that if the exchange remains at the level at which it is, we should see some tail expect on margins, at least for that 4 to 6 quarters period.
Okay. Thanks and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Dipesh Mehta from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Congrats on very strong execution and very healthy deal intake number. Two questions. First, about the revenue mix. Is our revenue mix still toward more new gen business? And we, as you commented about value-based pricing program, do you think structurally our margin will expand over medium term, considering these two factors where your new gen is growing and you have some ability to price it better? Second question is about, can you provide some update about how the Blackstone companies as a portfolio doing for us over, let's say, last few quarters? And the third thing is about the headcount addition, how we are managing our overall resource requirement, fresher versus lateral, if you can provide some color. Thanks.
So, Dipesh, on the first one, I think I actually reiterated the philosophy when I talked about the pricing discussion. Firstly, our attempt is to maximize growth, maximize TCV wins, and more importantly, TCV conversion to revenue growth. And that requires a certain investment, both in capability, competency build-up, utilization, having the right talent, all of the above. So I think we will prioritize growth. And the reason we want to hold the margin in the band is because there will be puts and takes that will require us, every quarter to adjust up or down some of these investments. So I think pricing is at this point in time, at least we are seeing it as a hedge against some of the inflationary pressures. But at this point, our expectation is to continue to operate in the margin guidance that we gave. And of course, there is, there will be, as I mentioned, based on, specific quarterly movement. For example, in Q1 we had unexpected, COVID issues. But I think we'll continue to operate in the guided range that we gave, but prioritize for growth. Second question that you had was around Blackstone portfolio. I think again, it's very much part of our direct business. It continues to be a fairly strong contributor to pipeline growth as well as TCV conversion. By definition, of course, those are companies that are not the size and scale of some of our larger accounts. But as a cluster, that is definitely very, very valuable to us, and we'll continue to invest and prioritize on that growth. Not only Blackstone, but all the other stakeholders that we are now working with, we'll sit in that bucket. We obviously made a lot of investment in creating a go-to-market approach and making sure that we have the right setup for us to service those customers. We'll continue to give you updates as we have any. Hopefully there will be some more specific updates. I think it's a little premature for us to talk about some of those at this stage. And finally, I think on the supply side, we are taking a supply chain approach. It's a blend of course, campus recruitment as well as, lateral recruitment. And not to forget, the third leg of the stool continues to be our talent transformation program called Talent Next. The additional thing we've done is we've added new supply centers. If you remember, the last quarter we talked about addition of our delivery centers in Taiwan. Actually, we expanded that significantly. Mexico was a new center. Costa Rica is a new center. Estonia is a new center. And we just announced we actually expanded in the UK for a specific client project outside of London in a city called Leeds. And we also announced a program to actually apply talent transformation and attract the talent pool from Calgary over the next couple of years. So I think all of these are supply chain initiatives as well as expansion in some markets like UK and Canada. All of this kind of goes into the solving the puzzle for finding the right talent for the right job in the right market at the right price.
Understand. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is in the line of Amit Ganantra from HDFC AMC. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I just have one question. Now DXC is a very small proportion of your overall top line, and anyways, the other, business segments continue to do well. So how long before, you can now confidently guide that you will have industry-leading overall top-line growth and not only the, direct core growth?
Manish, I think the answer to that is that as we have any update, we'll give you. I think at this point in time, you know, let's just stay with the fact that we expect industry-leading growth in direct, which is now 89% of our revenue. And we still expect, you know, top quartile growth in the overall company. Where we end up with FY22, you know, again, you know, we have 3 more quarters to go. But I think it's only fair given the current position that we will give you outlook based on our current visibility. So I think that's the best case, you know, visibility I can give you at this point in time. Having said that, I think keep in mind that we have seen accelerating growth in direct, and that has actually really helped us mitigate. And in many cases, you know, we were able to actually take dynamic calls on where we want to invest and what segments we want to grow. So it's great as a, as we try to manage the balance of the portfolio, it's great to actually have the optionality of making sure that we're able to grow in strategic chosen areas. And that's the philosophy that we'll continue to follow.
Sure. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mohit Jain from Anand Rathi. Please go ahead.
Hi Manish, just one question on the margin trajectory for the rest of the year. Like, are you guys, like, given the situation on the attrition side, are you guys planning some one-time correction of wages in one of the quarters? Or do you think the margin trajectory for the year should be quite similar to what we have seen in the past year?
Given we saw the increased demand and the supply situation, and this being a year of execution, while we had an upward bias to our margin, we felt it prudent to keep it in the range of 15.5 at the bottom. And, we want to make sure we continue with our philosophy of investing for growth and capture the opportunity for that at this point in time. We would like to make sure that, we believe we should be able to sustain the margins in a narrow band try and maximize from a growth opportunity perspective. As we talked about the investments that we made last quarter, and we managed to still deliver, consistent margins by, managing the discretionary spend. I would say that sustaining the margins is something that we will certainly be able to do during the year.
My specific question was, like, generally, first half versus second half, you had a different trend, of course, in FY21. But before that, we used to have better margins in the second half because most of the things used to happen in the first half. So from a second quarter specifically perspective, you are saying there is no specific correction that you'll see in one quarter or something. It will be the way it used to happen for Mphasis, spread across the year. Is that
the good thing from our model perspective is the compensation increase is baked in on a quarterly basis, given the philosophy of that being linked to the GQ score, which we talked about extensively in the last quarter's earnings. So we don't expect a lumpy one quarter big impact because of that. And at the same time, the tailwinds that we will have on the margins, how much of that will flow into the EBIT will depend on our desire to continue invest and plow back some of that to the SC expenses. And if we still get some tailwinds, and if the whole supply situation becomes better, both in terms of COVID as well as in terms of availability of talent, then it may see an outward bias. But at this point in time, based on what we see, we think it will remain in narrow range.
Understood. And second was on the M&A side. I think a few quarters back, we're talking about expanding some presence in Europe. So is there an update there, or how you guys are sort of approaching this whole thing of increasing our presence in Europe?
I can take that. I can take that, Manish. Yeah, M&A is not just a Europe issue, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think it's a multi-factor, matrix that we are working with. There's a competency element. I think we've talked about strengthening some of our tribes. Some of our tribes are market-leading. Some of them need more investment. Some of that acceleration can happen through M&A. For example, we did DevOps strengthening through Stelligent. We did data tribe strengthening through our acquisition of Datalytics in November. And we've identified a few more, areas as well as prospects that we are actively looking at right now. Second element is customer acquisition driven. There are segments of verticals or clients that we don't operate in. we have a very, very clear identification of which segments are attractive to us, and we have, that on the list as well as on the search process. And thirdly is geography. I think if you can find something that helps us accelerate growth in a new market, we'll definitely look at it. But there is really a combination of these three. If we can find something that cuts across two of the three, or three out of the three, that will get prioritized. And that's the philosophy we are taking. Very actively looking, very actively diligencing businesses, and very actively continue to source new transactions.
So we should expect something in FY22. Is that a fair...
Well, it's not done till it's done, so it's hard for me to give you a certainty on that, but the intent is definitely there.
Anything on size? How big or small could it be? Or any comfort range that you have while looking at these targets?
I think we talked about some indication in the last quarter. We said we're not looking to do transformational, it's not about doing a mega deal. It's really about looking at, still the mindset is a little bit, I would say, strategic stroke tuck-in. Tuck-ins are a little bit smaller, strategic a little bit bigger. But I would say anything that, that is, sub 10%, 15% of revenue is probably the upper limit right now.
Understood. Thank you, sir. That's all from my side and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vikas Ahuja from Antique Stock Broking. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Congrats on a very solid quarter. I have two questions. First, deal bookings continue to surprise positively. Just wanted to understand what has changed exactly, or what are we doing different that our bookings are much stronger than, compared to our peers especially. And secondly, on DXC, the revenue has been declining, and now, last quarter you said it will end up around mid-single digits. My question is, DXC has been surprising continuously on the negative side, and what gives us confidence now that it will actually end up at mid-single digits and they will not exit it completely? Thank you.
Yeah, I think on the first question, I actually spent a considerable amount of time going through the what works for us and what's the success formula that is actually working and giving us these larger deals and bigger TCV deals. If you kind of go back to the earnings deck that we presented and look at, the slide that talked about the four ingredients on slide 12, that's really a culmination of all the work we've done, all the deal architects we've constructed, early engagement with clients, consulting-led, tech advisory-led group, repeatability of our go-to-market muscle. If a deal archetype works in one customer, can be replicated to the other. And most importantly, our mindset of being in the business of one, which means every customer, gets, a fairly dedicated, engagement, personalized kind of mindset. That helps us contextualize, understand the client environment, and then position for maximum impact. On your second question around DXC, of course, there are no guarantees. No customer has given any guarantee. We have to continue to work to kind of win that business. Based on our understanding of the account, the relationship, their needs, our, ability to help, whether in industries or in geographies, we do believe at this point in time that we will have continuity of relationship. As and when things evolve and if things then change, we will give you the update. But I think that's the best answer I can give you right now. On our visibility. Of course, as I mentioned, right, if things change, we will update you. There are no guarantees in business. We have to earn every day.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nirmal Bari from Sameeksha Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking my question and congrats on the very good set of numbers. My first question is on the logistics and transportation, the gross margin that we give in segmental. So there we have been recording significantly stronger gross margins in logistics and transportation. So what is the reason for that, and is that sustainable?
I think, every client environment is different. Every industry has its own different dynamic. Competitive intensity, value pricing, we talked about. Some of those things are at play here. So I think this is not something new. It's historically been true as well. And we do continue to believe that as long as we keep feeding growth into that segment, you know, we'll have the ability and the leverage to continue to generate good margins there.
And the second part is the others that we report. So is there any segment significantly big enough there that we would want to break out, break that segment out from it?
You know, we made certain changes to the segment reportings. I think we still have some more work to do as we expand some of these segments. We talked about 5 focus areas on the NCA side. You know, we are right now clubbing you know, many of those in others. We will start reporting them separately as we believe we get to a point that that we need to you know, start reporting. I think at this point in time, these are good visibility areas for us to give you.
The third question is, one of the participants earlier asked this question, but I would like to frame it a bit differently. On the supply side, since there's what we are seeing from the industry, there's so much of issue regarding attrition and wage inflation and everything. We have typically over the years been giving salary hikes over the entire duration of the year, and there's no one single quarter where this impacts. But this time, are we planning to do it a bit differently? I think there would be a salary hike related to the normal upskilling, as well as we would give out some one-off salary hikes in any particular quarter just to retain employees.
I think that's a good question. We debate that constantly. And I think as part of that periodic adjustment that we've talked about, we always have some discretion in how we want to play that, how we want to, you know, spend that, so to speak, retention, you know, pool. So I think we'll continue to make those decisions on a pretty dynamic basis, on a judicious basis. I think I have a little bit of a different approach and view to you know, the demand supply dynamic. I think we are, as an industry, we are in the business of creating net new skills. We exist because clients, you know, expect us to bring skills to them. We expect us to bring a lot more than skills today. But at the very heart, we have to continue to find ways to create new supply chains. And I think I talked a little bit about how we've expanded that, you know, across locations, across geographies, across tiers, across experience levels, and across cities. I think we'll just continue to do that. And whatever it takes in the interim to keep customer service delivery at the heart of everything we do and make sure that we are able to retain, retrain, and onboard new talent, I think all of those are part of the equation.
Okay, thanks. And the final question is, if you can please repeat the 11 to 20 customers growth in the current quarter sequentially as well as year on year. I missed that number earlier.
Sure. I think the 11 to 20 number is 19%.
Year on year.
Yes. Not trailing 12 months.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is in the line of Ashwin Mehta from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity and congrats on good set of numbers. Nitin, one question in terms of we've done pretty well in the top 10 accounts and now we are seeing a broadening of that growth with say 19% growth in your top 11 to 20. So if you can just give some idea on the next set of clients, their profile in terms of size, scale, as well as potential to drive continued improvement in terms of deal flow going forward.
Absolutely. I think the profile of customers is actually not that different. Because if you kind of recall, most of our clients, you know, I talked about the fact that we now have top 10 U.S. banks by assets as customers. We had 5 of them, you know, 3 years ago. So those will obviously not be sitting in top 10 already. That's a good example of what potential exists outside of top 10. I think by definition, you know, we are obviously a little bit more tilted towards the Fortune 100, 200, 500 client segment anyways. So that's where I think the opportunity is really, really immense. You know, we have the playbook. We understand what it takes to you know, create that being in the business of one mindset. We operate with a very, you know, high client centricity mindset. We invest in engagement and understanding of the client priorities, and we take the best of emphasis through our tribes and engagement teams in there. So I'm actually very excited that we have a tremendous, you know, group of customers outside the top 10, potentially not just the top next 10, but the next 25 to 30 that actually can definitely be, you know, target potential areas for us to bring into this, but, you know, into the client metric that we've talked about. The reason we now have 4 clients over 100 million, 7 clients over 50 million, and the fact that we've improved every segment of metric is really the playbook that we have to just continue to apply to, you know, at scale. And that's really what I think, you know, we are very, very focused on from an execution standpoint.
Fair. Thanks. And just one more in terms of, say, do you see an exercise of that MRC shortfall-related penalty clause in DXC near-term, and could that be a one-time benefit for us in terms of margins near-term, or we would still think about smoothing the decline instead of going in for that?
Yeah, at this point, I would refrain from making any comments or confirmations, because it's just, you know, we want to just make sure that we have all the optionality we need as we think about those things. So we'll give you an update as we go through the next in a couple of quarters.
Okay. Thanks, Nitin, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is in the line of Ashok from FUD Life. Please go ahead. Ashok, your line is in the talk mode. Please go ahead. As there's no response from the current participant, we'll move on to the next. That is in the line of Rashid Jhunjhunwala from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Just one question. You know, given that we are seeing a pretty sharp decline in DXP for the past 4-5 quarters, I just wanted to understand a bit in terms of how do we manage, you know, the supply side there or the headcount, right? Because if you really look at that, you know, if DXC is largely a non-BFSI portfolio. So just wanted to understand, you know, the fungibility, does that help? How do we manage supply there? And is that does that have any bearing on margins in the near term?
Absolutely, Rishi. Great question. I think there are two ways to think about it. There is some potential for us to redeploy. There is extremely, you know, high complexity in matching those, you know, ramp downs with ramp ups. And in many cases, we actually have to run them through the Talent Next program with that visibility in mind. So I think it's a complex equation that we have to manage. That definitely has a bearing on, you know, many of the metrics that you see in the MD&A. For example, you know, you will see decline in, you know, ITO business. You will see decline in some elements of our verticals. So some places we do have fungibility. In some cases, we use that as best as we can. I think our first effort is to make sure that we are able to run them through our reskilling programs and absorb them. And that's one of the reasons why you will see on a net addition basis, you know, we are still, you know, while the numbers are going up, you know, we are still able to actually reuse and redeploy some of those people. To your question around margin impact, yes, that has some impact on holding cost or utilization, because it's impossible to match it on a day-to-day basis. But that's something that, you know, that we've made part of our you know, management matrix, and we have to continue to focus on those on a daily basis.
Great. And secondly, on the deal wins, right, given that, you know, the quantum has increased substantially, can you give some color on, you know, how the average tenure has moved over the past 1 year? And also, if the large landmark deal that we had won has already started giving revenues in 1Q. Thank you.
So, Rishi, I think the average tenure, I mean, we haven't put that number out publicly. We obviously are tracking it internally. If you look at the metric of the 96 million average deal size, that obviously, you know, is also impacted by the fact that the large deal was actually a 10-year deal. That's probably the longest deal we've actually signed in the history of the company. But most, you know, on an average basis, our duration actually definitely has moved, I would say, you know, closer to the 2 to 3 year mark. There's always a blend. There are some deals that are more shorter term, less than a year, depending on the type of work we do. but there are many that go in the 3, 4, 5 year category. So I think it's a very good, I would say, reset and capability reflection that we're able to actually do larger, more transformational deals that run longer as well.
If I can just add to that, Rishi, Manish, while there is an increase in the number of large deals and the size of large deals, and we are winning significant amount of TCV, the tenure is not increasing very significantly. Is also reflected in the fact that when you see the correlation coefficient which we have been reporting, that has actually shown an improvement, trend in terms of year on year, which means, we are converting the TCV to revenue in a better manner than what we were doing before.
Yeah, I think the only other question that you asked, Rishi, is the large deal conversion. I think we talked about the fact that we're going to be in transition in the current quarter, and we expect that to start converting to revenue Q3 onwards.
Thank you so much. All the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sulabh Goela from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. I just had one question. So on your top 10 client base, where we've seen a significant growth this quarter, Nitin, you touched upon, client mining and market share gains, particularly in the strategic accounts that we've seen there. So just wanted to understand that where we are in that journey of these vendor consolidation exercises, and how much do you think is played out already in the numbers there?
I think the fact that we're able to grow all of our top accounts over 50 million, they're actually top 7 accounts, so to speak, and the fact that you're still seeing 6 to 10 grow dramatically faster than 1 to 5 or even 1 to 10 is reflective of the fact that we are on the right side of the consolidation, especially in our strategic accounts. Secondly, I think, as I mentioned earlier, we definitely feel there is runway ahead from this investment cycle that we are seeing in tech. It's not a short-term phenomenon, so there's definitely going to be, as long as we have the right set of competencies and we make sure that we continue to invest in those, I think there is a runway ahead for us to continue to gain wallet share, in those accounts. Of course, we are very focused on the rest of the pyramid, outside of the top 5 and the top 10, as I just mentioned, because I think that's where we are seeding these accounts to actually become another 20 to 50 to 75 to 100 million accounts in that sequence as we progress them through the conversion. If you remember, I actually talked about conversion rates, because that's something we measure very, very, closely.
Sure. Thank you. That's very helpful.
Thank you. The next question is in the line of Ashok from SUD Life. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, this is Hashmukh from SUD Life. Thanks for giving me the opportunity and congrats for the good numbers, consistent numbers on the direct side. I have one question on the DXC front. Just wanted to dig slightly deeper on the revenue leakage here. So let's say in terms of what type of work is being getting transferred, or is it a lower margin business for you and it is being transferred to any other, let's say, Indian vendors, or it's DXC being insourcing it? Any color on that front will be helpful.
At least to our knowledge, we don't think this is a wallet share issue. I think for us, what we are doing really is continuing to focus on where we think there's opportunity for us. And I think the life cycle of those businesses is different. And we'll continue to, as I mentioned earlier, on where we think there is best, use of our growth investment and dollars. The relationship continues to be good. We know there is opportunity, but we'll continue to focus on where we think there is best, use of our strategic, focus.
Okay. That was helpful. That's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Nitin Rakesh for his closing comments.
Thank you, operator. I think, again, we've had a great start to FY22. Thank you all for, your questions, your patience, your interest, and your coverage of the company. We look forward to staying consistent with our performance and continue to keep our clients and our employees at the heart of everything we do. Thank you very much. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you next quarter.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Mphasis Limited, that concludes this conference call. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.